Welcome back to this portion of The Zesty Garden. My next interview is with the author of Hellstrip Gardening, Create a Paradise Between the Sidewalk and the Curb. It's by Evelyn Haddon. And Evelyn is on the line with me, and we're going to talk about what you can do with that strip of property that usually has either rocks or grass in it that's between the sidewalk and the street, or maybe even between your driveway and the neighbor's driveway, a way to beautify it, and especially in Utah, not use a lot of water at all. And Evelyn, thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure, Brian. I've been looking forward to this.
I understand you're in Washington right now?
I am. I'm at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show.
Well, send some rain our way, or snow especially. We really need it right now, and this is a great time to talk about this as we prepare for the summer season. So why the book? Why did the idea come to you to do this?
Actually, Timber Press came to me and asked me to write it. They were very interested in doing a book on Hellstrip gardening, and immediately when they brought up the topic, I could imagine doing a whole book about it, because since I started thinking about gardens and writing about gardens, I have noticed those little fragments of land that are sort of leftovers, and oftentimes the lawn in them, if there is one, is really not very well kept up, or it just can't grow very well in those places. And I've often thought, wow, they could be put to much better use. They could really be rewarding if they were planted with something else.
In your experience, have you found any of these places either too small or too large to really to plant with well?
Oh, heavens no. I'm of the opinion that there's a plant for every place. You know, there's more than one plant for every place. It's just a matter of figuring out what the conditions are, or maybe modifying them if it's a smaller place, and then finding the plants that work with that place.
And in Utah, they're usually called the parking strip. So I just want to make sure that people understand that we're talking about the same thing when we talk about hellstrip gardening. It's like parking strips in Utah. I'm not sure why. That's just regionally that's what they're called here. And one of the things that I have to make mention of, certain cities in Utah restrict what can go into these. Now, I think it's getting better, but have you found that around the country as well, that sometimes you run into zoning laws that restrict you from doing anything other than what is either in that covenant or in the regulations from the city?
Oh, sure. There are great variations regionally, both in what the hellstrip is called and in what you can plant in it or cannot plant in it, or how you what structures you can put in it, if any, or even who owns it. So it is good to check with your city and figure out if there are any rules that you would be abiding by when you're developing your hellstrip.
So usually you see grass. What's the first thing you're going to do when you think, okay, I want to take this grass out? So you've checked with the city, you found it's going to be okay. What I have a tendency to do is get rid of the grass and then do the planting, but that's kind of backwards.
You can, it depends how you want to get rid of the grass. Now, if you're going to get rid of the grass by digging it up so that you'll be able to plant right away, then you should have your design ready to go. But if you're going to get rid of the grass by, say, smothering it or solarizing it with black plastic, then that will take some time, so you could do that first. And as it's dying, you can be designing your parking strip.
I'm working with an area that is about 40 feet long and about 6 to 7 feet wide that is between my driveway and the neighbor's driveway, and I just want to make sure I have as drought tolerant of plants as I can get, but keep color the whole year round, which I know is possible. But I have field bindweed. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest worry is putting these plants in, but not keeping the bindweed out. Any suggestions?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, I don't use chemicals on my own garden. I am experimenting also with how to move things away from being bindweed controlled. I understand that it doesn't necessarily grow well in shade, so there's possibilities there for putting more dense, taller plants in that would shade it out. Other than that, I don't really have an easy magic wand solution for you. I'm sorry.
For most of these hell strips, do you recommend keeping them open, or would you put down plastic or some kind of mulch to try to keep the weeds down, and then just plant as you can within that.
I'm a fan of not using plastic in a planting bed. It's just so hard to deal with if you have to move anything around or change anything. I am a big fan of mulching and also of using living mulches to cover the ground, because the more that you can cover the ground, the better you can retain soil moisture and protect the soil against erosion and that sort of thing. So I feel like it's a healthier solution.
And part of one of the other drawbacks about black plastic is, if you want your area to naturalize with seeds dropping from the plants or the plant expanding, that doesn't work. You don't get that naturalized look.
Right. And you know, if you want your garden to be thriving, I really do feel like sometimes a garden will look like it's more healthy if there are some seedlings or if there is a little spread of the plants, if it looks like they can actually reproduce on their own.
Your book is a couple hundred pages, almost 300 pages.
I'm wordy.
But it's not wordy. It's full color, lots of full color photographs all over that show you the different types of plants, plus being able to look at various types of hellstrip gardening. And your first area you talk about in the book is inspirations. And this is kind of helpful, because I'm thinking, okay, I don't necessarily want to plant something from Portland, Oregon, because you list the cities, but I might like to take some kind of design elements from something in Portland and then plant plants that are more specific to my area.
And that's the intention. You can use these design inspirations with any appropriate plants to your climate or your region. The point is that you can plant a water-wise hellstrip, and it can be in a variety of styles. You use your own style and your own preferences so that it makes a garden that you love.
And we were talking about one of the challenges, of course, with the weeds. What other types of challenges do you have to overcome as you're getting ready to put in your plants? What things should you be on the lookout for?
Well, one of the biggest challenges is if you already have a tree in your hellstrip. That's a tough one. You want to work around the roots, and you want to make sure that you choose companion plants that don't compete too heavily with the tree, so that it stays healthy and they can stay healthy as well. So that's a big one. And, of course, in Utah, water is a big challenge, and so I'm very interested in ways that you can save water or develop a landscape that doesn't use as much water, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners are as well.
Many of the landscapes in Utah have irrigation already into those sections, and that's part of the problem, is that the water comes on every time you turn on the sprinklers. They're usually timed, and so you can get too much water into these areas, especially. Do you recommend just capping those off, or just putting on a drip emitter to water your plants in these areas?
You can do either one. A lot of times the solution will depend. It'll depend on what kind of garden you put in and what kind of landscaping you have in the rest of your yard. Of course, ideally, you'd develop all of your yard into a water-wise landscape, and then if you do have sprinklers or irrigation system, then it could be changed, adjusted, so that it wasn't watering very often, just as often as they need. You have some great resources, waterwiseplants.utah.gov. There's a whole plant list and an explanation of how you might change your watering system depending on what kinds of plants that you put in and how often you plan to water.
And the USU Extension website is great as well. They've developed several different books on the types of plants, how to plant them, how to put them in. So in a companion with what you've got here, which is showing what you can do in the hellstrip, I think you could find it, any information that you'd need to have to put something like this in.
That's great to have those kinds of resources that are so specific to the local area.
I'm thinking about when you are designing this area. I mean, you don't have to worry about the dimensions, because it's usually pretty typically restricted, but you do have to worry about what happens once the plants begin to grow. So, for instance, if you have cars that park right next to this area, you're probably not going to put, say, a Russian sage right on the very edge of it.
Yes, I do spend a chapter talking about access, and that's a good point that you want to make sure that people can park and get out of their cars and be able to walk across this parking strip if needed so that they can reach your house or the sidewalk. So you would want to put periodic pathways for them, and also maybe think about is a car door going to run into your plant, or is a person going to be carrying something and need to have a way to get across that parking strip without being able to look down. So yeah, you do have to think about those kinds of things as you're designing.
What about the wildlife? I'm thinking this could be something to really attract birds, especially, and insects.
Yeah, if you have a street tree, it does provide really good habitat for wildlife. Birds are a great example. Pollinators are another one. There's a pollinator pathway here in Seattle that's been developed over 1 mile between two larger green spaces, and the people who live on that stretch have all developed their parking strips so that the pollinators can travel along them between the two green spaces.
And what about the soil? What should you be looking at in the soil? Is it worth having a soil test done first before you begin?
Well, again, it depends. I mean, if you're thinking this is the only sunny area of my yard, I'm going to need to grow some edibles here, then yes, you definitely would want a soil test, and you'd probably just want to plan on bringing in new soil, because if your road has been around for a while, then chances are that lead and other pollutants from the vehicle traffic have accumulated in that soil, and they don't go away. But if you're planting, ornamentals, something to just give you year-round color, like you suggested, then I don't know that would be necessary. If you've been gardening for a while, you probably know your soil pretty well, and you could figure out what grows there. What would grow there and what wouldn't grow there?
I'm talking with Evelyn Haddon. She's the author of Hellstrip Gardening: Create a Paradise Between the Sidewalk and the Curb. And it's from Timber Press. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the toll-free number is 1-800-826-1495. Or you can send us an email question. It's zestygarden@gmail.com. And we have a question from Hillary. She's via email. She does the book include plants for the Intermountain West?
It does. It includes plants for all over the country. It doesn't specifically have a section on the Intermountain West, but it has a plant dictionary at the back that's separated into plants with showy flowers, plants with showy foliage, plants for culinary and medical uses, and plants for four-season structure. And each of those little plant listings has an idea of where the plants would grow and what kinds of conditions they would want.
And
So
Hillary,
it's not specifically for your region.
so you need to kind of know a little bit more about what plants grow well in your area. And so you were mentioning that website before of plants for Utah.
Definitely. And if you go to a nursery that is participating in the WaterWise plant tagging program, the nurseries actually have tags on the plants that show which ones are WaterWise, and you can kind of just pick up the ones with those tags and feel pretty comfortable that they would work with less water.
Our emailer Hillary also mentioned, and this is for the city of Logan, so I'm assuming there might be other areas as well, but Logan City must approve any tree selection for the park strip, and they will, at least Logan will not approve quaking aspen, which I heartily applaud.
Yes, and that's pretty common for urban areas to have their own requirements about which trees to plant, and that's a good thing to think carefully about anyway. Trees require really careful thought before you would put them in, especially in an area where you might have overhead power lines or underground utilities.
And you wouldn't especially want to have a tree that's planted that begins, the roots begin to lift up the sidewalk, for instance.
No,
Is that an area?
or a tree that would drop things on you.
One of the things that I wanted to talk about was usually this area is going, it's hell strip, so you're thinking heat. So the plants that are going to go into this area need to be able to take a little more heat than just, you don't want to just put any plant in there.
That's true. There is that urban heat island effect when pavement is nearby. And that can be a blessing, too. You can get earlier bloom, you know, from some of those little bulbs and things. So it can kind of, you can look at it both ways, as a challenge and a blessing.
I'm thinking growing tomatoes. that would be a big blessing.
Yes.
Do you see a lot of these that are grown in vegetables rather than in flowers or other plants?
It depends. So sometimes the yard will be shady because there will be trees, and the only sunny place might be out on the hell strip or out by the driveway. And so, yes, in those cases, those gardeners are so grateful to find a place with sunshine that they might take, you know, spend the extra effort it requires to develop these places into nice vegetable gardens.
If
you wouldn't want homegrown tomatoes?
Oh, I know. Well, the other thing is it's on the sidewalk. Maybe some folks might help themselves, too. And depending on how many tomatoes you plant, that might not be a bad idea.
That can be a really nice idea. That can really make a neighborhood feel welcoming. That can really change the experience of pedestrians. You know, so I'm an advocate of sort of planning to share.
If you had just a couple of plants to choose to put into an area like this, what would you start with?
Oh, you're asking me tough questions. it depends on what you want. You know, really, if you want year-round color like you're suggesting, I would go for, and if you're sort of a typical gardener in a typical neighborhood where maybe you're the first one to try developing your, mm-hmm. your hell strip or your parking strip, I'd go for plants that are kind of lower and showier and with persistent foliage. So I'm a fan of Basket of Gold, Arenia saxatilis. It has nice persistent foliage and beautiful yellow flowers, and it's very easy care. I like sea lavender. That's also a really nice Limonium latifolium. Coral bells can do well if they're not exposed to too much wind, and they always have really nice foliage and blooms, but they're a little bit pickier if they get too dry. Mm. Bearberry has lovely foliage, I think, and a really nice year-round structure to it. So those are just some of my favorites.
Great. Well, Evelyn, we've reached the end of our time. I really appreciate you joining me on the program today. I've been speaking with Evelyn Haddon. She's author of Hellstrip Gardening, Create a Paradise Between the Sidewalk and the Curb, and it's available from Timber Press. Thank you, Evelyn.
Thank you so much, Brian.
And stay tuned for the next portion of Zesty Garden coming up, and it is our newest segment, Bug Bites.